TomDispatch.com. This is TomCast. Interviews and insight from Tom Dispatch contributors for anyone seeking a deeper understanding of our post-9/11 world and a clear sense of how our global imperial system actually works. I'm Timothy McBain. Recently, I had the pleasure of speaking again with retired Army Colonel and Boston University professor Andrew Bacevich. We spoke about the various phases of the so-called global war on terror, the successes, and the disappointments. When discussing the wars of the past decade, the mainstream media makes much of the successes, as does, of course, the White House, while critics focus on the failures. Can you offer an overview of what the successes and failures have been?
Well, I'm not sure I would use the term failure in all cases. I think it'd be more appropriate to talk of disappointments. And the disappointments have been legion. When what we used to call the global war on terror began, it began at a time when both the United States military and the American people felt confident that when the U.S. military went into action, the result would be victory. Decisive, definitive, end the fight, solve the problem, victory. And although the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan both began on a promising note, suggesting that victory was within reach, the sad reality is that we didn't win either war. Didn't win Iraq, we won't win Afghanistan. So that was a big disappointment. Somewhere around the end of 2006, early 2007, people in Washington and people in the military, notably General David Petraeus, persuaded themselves that they had come up with a new formula to achieve success, not exactly battlefield victory, but a set of methods that could at least restore order to the places that we had turned upside down. And that idea, that formula, that method was counterinsurgency. And although, again, early on, there seemed to be signs of this working, most notably the so-called surge in Iraq, as time has elapsed, it has become clear in Iraq that the surge didn't fix the problem, and the effort to apply counterinsurgency in Afghanistan has not produced anything like the results that we had hoped. So there, too, large-scale exertions, major disappointment. And I think that brings us down really to a third phase of the so-called war on terror, and that's where the Obama administration, distancing itself from counterinsurgency, has now inaugurated a policy of targeted assassination relying on missile-carrying drones and special operations forces.
Is there anything that hasn't been a disappointment?
Well, I think that I am struck by the extraordinary durability of the so-called all-volunteer force, that especially if you look at the U.S. Army and the U.S. Marine Corps, these are services that have been at war for more than a decade. The exertions imposed upon young Americans have been extraordinary, and yet both of those institutions have hung together remarkably well. If we contrast the durability of the Army and the Marine Corps today with, for example, the durability of the Army and the Marine Corps the last time we had a protracted war in Vietnam, well, this generation really has performed extraordinarily well. So down there at the level of where soldiers and Marines and sergeants and captains and lieutenants are called upon to serve, I think that the overall performance has been enormously commendable. No disappointment there.
Yeah, given that, I mean, the U.S. military really is an extraordinary military force, would you say that, you know, these disappointments and these problems that have been existing for all these years, is it a result of actions by those on the ground or decisions by those at the top?
Well, I think that the biggest explanation for the disappointments is a failure of senior leadership, both civilians and military. The civilians have embarked upon war with very unrealistic, even utopian, political expectations. And the generals, I'm sorry to say, have not performed especially well, and I think have been slow to learn, have been slow to respond to disappointments and to develop alternatives.
Can you talk a bit about Michael Vickers? Because as you write in your article, he hasn't had the celebrity status of Petraeus or McChrystal, and many people might not be familiar with who he is and what his role is.
Well, I think he is the emblematic figure in this third phase of the war that I was just describing. He is a fairly senior, but not especially well-known, official in the office of the Secretary of Defense. He's a holdover from the Bush administration. I believe he's the senior most holdover from the Bush era, still in DOD. As a younger man, he himself served in U.S. Army Special Forces. He was a CIA covert operative who played a very large role in supporting the Mujahideen in Afghanistan when they were fighting against the Soviet resistance. And he is a guy who never believed the Bush-era freedom agenda, that we were going to liberate the greater Middle East and transform it into a garden of democracy. I don't believe he ever took seriously the claims of the advocates of counterinsurgency who believed that we could pacify the greater Middle East. Vickers' view is that we need to kill bad guys. Anybody who wants to kill an American, we should kill them first. And that really is the essence of what this new counterterrorism strategy, as people in Washington call it, or targeted assassination policy, as I would prefer to call it, that's what it's about. Let's try to go kill all the people who want to kill Americans and do it in a proactive, preemptive way, disregarding issues of national sovereignty, disregarding any sort of requirement to consult the American people or get an authorization from Congress. It's a war in the shadows, and I think it very much remains to be seen whether or not this approach is going to produce an outcome any better than the disappointing outcome of the first two rounds of this now very long conflict.
And you end your article with the rhetorical question, is this progress? What would your answer be to that question?
My answer is no. And I think the biggest problem with the targeted assassination policy is that it's a policy that ignores the political basis for the conflict. The reason that this antagonistic relationship exists between ourselves and violent Islamic radicals, the reasons are complex and deep-seated. And the notion that we can just bump off terrorists one at a time until the supply of terrorists runs out, I think flies in the face of the fact that political differences of a profound nature are what produced terrorists in the first place. And this new approach, the Vickers approach, is one that basically wants to ignore the political dimension of the problem. And to my mind, in that regard, no, it doesn't represent progress. It actually represents a move in the wrong direction.
To read Andrew Bacevich's article, Scoring the Global War on Terror, From Liberation to Assassination in Three Quick Rounds, please visit tomdispatch.com. You can also find Andrew's latest books, Washington Rules and The Short American Century, at amazon.com or at any quality bookstore near you. I'm Timothy McBain, and until we meet again, thanks for listening.